Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Hey, nope, that's a lie. It's John Hanson in for John Williams on this incredibly, incredibly gorgeous Monday afternoon in the city of Chicago. It's nice and warm out in the burbs. I saw that I was just reading on Downers Grove and some other the southwest suburbs getting up into the mid-70s already. Downtown a little bit colder, but we're used to that. Really just an incredible day. I am, as many folks know, more of a Cubs fan, but the White Sox got a great opener on Friday. The weather-wise, it cleared up, warmed up a little bit. It was overall just a pretty nice day. But man, the Cubs are getting so lucky today with their home opener. It was just 1 year ago. I think a lot of folks will remember Cubs getting snowed out at Wrigley Field. About an inch of snow fell in the early morning hours to the point that they couldn't even melt it before the game started. So it didn't. It was delayed another day. So just a really incredible day across Chicagoland. So I'm going to be here till 3, and then Roe and Anna, they're on at 3 here on the stream live, and it'll be business as usual until the end of the White Sox game. They're on the mega station, of course. And then after the White Sox game, they'll join regular programming. So we still want you to join the conversation here, 312-981-7200. You can talk or text on in. We'd love to hear what you're doing on this gorgeous Monday. It was like the perfect day to call Hookie today, if you're able to do that. And we've got some tips for in case you want to call the rest of the day on off. But today, it's just one of those top 10 Chicago days. Obviously, we'll have warmer days as the days progress, but just an unexpected little surprise there. Did you have a nice sunny weekend? Elf, did you do anything fun out there? Are you trying to see if your microphone works here?
I had a lot of family stuff going on this weekend.
Okay. Serious family stuff or
no,
fun family stuff?
Fun family stuff. I had dinner last night at Port Edwards, which is owned by or managed by my friend's dad.
Okay.
So we had a really good dinner there, and then just lots of walking around, really, and trying to get out of the apartment.
And
first
now,
of all,
I forget, you live in the city, correct?
Yes.
So it was a little cooler here. That was the one thing that kind of stunk if you live in the city over the weekend. They were getting the warm temperatures in the suburbs, but the city was much cooler. But either way, the sunshine made it a nice day to walk around both days.
Yes, totally.
Did you get drenched yesterday?
No, I didn't, luckily, because I was mostly in the car when that happened.
That was incredible. Yeah, it was a real strong little downpour coming through the area late afternoon and the evening. But overall, pretty nice weekend. So do you want, I mean, if you had your druthers and you were to go outside today, what's the first thing producer Elif is doing as she walks around Chicago? What are you doing? What's the one thing you can do on your way home?
I would take a walk on the lakefront path.
Yeah, that sounds like a perfect thing to do. A little cooler near the lake today. But that's a perfect free thing to do and just really enjoy it. Want to say hello to Lauren Lapka in traffic. Lauren, I just met you just a few minutes ago. You've been obviously on the show and the program here for a while on WGN. But did you have any fun activities this weekend? You're a White Sox fan, right, Lauren?
I am.
Did you get to go to any of the games?
I got to go to the home opener.
Oh, and the weather was pretty good. It was a little chilly, but not too bad.
It was a little chilly. The wind, obviously, as always, made it worse.
Right.
But once the sun hit, everyone was kind of toasting.
And it was an awesome game, too.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when we were all there, me being me and Rokon,
right,
and Anna DeVlantis, our whole show, when we were there, we were winning, no problem. And then we all left to come back knowing that we were going to have to go on the air after the game.
Right.
And I arrived, I was like, what happened?
Yeah, right.
But luckily, I saw them come back.
Yeah, they pulled it out. They were just making it exciting. They're just trying to keep the ratings high so that when it rolled right into Roe, the ratings were still ready to go and everything.
Right, keep them hooked.
Exactly. Steve Bertrand, I don't know if you're on and chatting. I hope you're enjoying this sunny Monday. At least it looks good from the window.
I never get a chance to go out, and so because of pregame, I was able to go out and take a little walk, get down to Millennium Park. It was nice.
Oh, you went all the way down. You took a nice little stroll there.
Yeah, okay, I went to Mariano's and got lunch.
Okay, I was going to say, because that's a...
But I could see Millennium Park.
You could see it in the distance. But no, I cannot... I was trying to think of, for the Cubs opener today, I used to ditch school and go to openers when I was in high school, and I can remember another snow out during the Don Baylor era. This is, gosh, got to be about 20 years ago now, going all the way to Wrigley only for the game to be snowed out. But I cannot think of another day this perfect for early baseball that we're having here today. So I know a lot of folks listening probably aren't at the game, unfortunately. Maybe wishing they were, or at the Sox game as well. Just another gorgeous day for their fourth home game, too. I wanted to pull up some articles about, like, things to do, because we're in this middle period now where a lot of restaurants or a lot of places aren't ready necessarily for outdoor seating yet. Some of them are a little more mobile, especially in the neighborhoods. They're able to set up some outdoor seating pretty quickly. But things you can do on a day in Chicago today. So if you have some free time this afternoon, but 312-981-7200. My list is pretty city heavy. I've lived in the city for a long time now. Grew up in Downers Grove, and I can think of some things to do. So if you've got any things to contribute, especially in the suburbs, I'd love to give some people some inspiration. But the simple go on a walk thing seems to be the prevailing theme. If you can just get out and enjoy some of the day today, it's really going to improve your mood. And what a perfect, I mean, I think we'd all rather have this on Friday, to get that Friday feel going, but it kind of feels like a Friday outside, but we'll take it on a Monday. But of course, the list that I see all include basic things like exploring Lincoln Park or taking a look or speeding around Lake Michigan or riding around Lake Michigan. But there's a lot of other things to do out there. So 312-981-7200 if you've got some suggestions for what people can do on this day. But Elif, the one that I thought of, and I've been looking, I'm on kayak watch because I haven't seen any, but we think we found one place that is open, or at least their answering machine says they're open for business. What, do you remember which one that was? Was that Urban?
It was Urban. No, it was Kayak Chicago.
Kayak
actually.
Chicago. Yeah, we've been trying to get a hold of them because a lot of places, it makes sense. They're not going to be open here normally this early in the season, but we've been trying to get a hold of one to let us know to make sure that they were open. Kayak Chicago, which is located off North Avenue, just north of where the Goose Island comes back together though after the river splits. Their website says they're open. I've tried calling, so if you're looking for a last-minute kayak ride, maybe give them a ring. We tried to email them, so maybe all indications are that it's not actually open, but give it a try, right?
Yeah, well, I've sent some emails, so mm-hmm. I'll let you know when I hear back.
Yeah, let us know if you know if the kayaking open. The one thing I wanted to check on was the Chicago Architecture River Cruise. And Elf, have you ever done one of those?
I have.
What'd you think?
I loved it. I thought it was, like, one of the coolest amenities, I guess, for tourism here in Chicago.
Right. And I felt like even as a Chicagoan, it was a really eye-opening experience. I mean, I'm not much of an architecture buff by any stretch. I do appreciate the different forms of architecture and how it comes all together to form our gorgeous skyline. But just like the history and the order in which the buildings were built, the reasons for why they were originally built and why they looked the way they were, I thought that was so cool.
Yeah. Like, there are some buildings down in the Loop area, like Merchandise Mart. They mm-hmm. explain why it's called Merchandise Mart, and it was a long time ago, so I don't remember a lot of it. But
yeah, we're stretching.
When it was happening, though, I was definitely engaged in listening closely to everything. I wouldn't have expected myself to do so.
Merchandise Mart, once owned by the Kennedy family. Joe Kennedy owned
there
Merchandise Mart. I do remember that factoid. Lauren, have you ever had a chance to do one of those architecture tours yet or no?
I have not, but funny enough, I've seen a DVD
okay.
version
okay.
of that tour.
So you did the inside version. You
right.
just, yeah, mm-hmm.
Which is very lame.
Right. Gotta see it, right.
It was somewhat interesting. I was only half paying attention. Obviously, I would rather be on a boat
right.
than watching a boat mm-hmm. go through the tour.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my little tidbit of advice, though, for you, Lauren. When you do go on a really warm day, because otherwise
it is chilly.
It gets chilly.
And you're
it's
out there messy. For a while.
Yeah.
But the nice thing is with the Chicago Architecture Foundation, they do a great job. They're double-layered, the boats, so they have the indoor spot you could go to, but then you can't look up, you can't see.
Yeah, it's not as fun.
But they do serve drinks downstairs. Because I did the architecture.
Well, I'm all in then.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you need. And they serve, at least they did in the fall when I went, it was like a hot chocolate with some spirits inside of it. I did a boozed up hot chocolate.
Nice.
Is that a haunted hot chocolate?
No, a boozed up one.
Okay.
Is that what it's called, though? Haunted?
Well, you said spirits.
Oh.
I'm being so
no,
well.
No, I appreciate
that
it.
Went that went right good. Over both our
that
heads.
That did, but it was good. It shouldn't have. That was good effort, Lauren. I'm going to give you credit for that. Yeah. It was a boozy hot chocolate. They do boozy cider, stuff like that. Don't know if that's good in the heat of summer, but that sounds perfect for today. Well, anyways, talking all about this, I went on the website, and I'm finding out that, yes, there are tickets available for one more cruise today. I think a lot of people had the same thing in mind today in terms of getting on. I thought there'd be a lot more available, but I think as people saw this day was going to be really nice, whether it's tourists or, you know, they sell tickets as you're walking around. If you're walking back where our old haunts used to be at 435 North Michigan.
There's the water taxi stand right there.
And there's the guy who's always trying to, like, hey, you know, when they have tickets, they try and peddle them out. They try and get you to take the tour. They take advantage of people walking by. And they should. But it says that you can get it for the 4 p.m. cruise. So if you want to take a tour today, there is still one more cruise that looks like it still has tickets available. It's at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Looks like Ticketmaster's got the tickets. And just go there and get your ticket today.
I have a question
for
you.
Yeah, go ahead, Elif.
Do you know if the water taxi people sell, like, monthly passes like the CTA does?
I believe they do. So, okay. I've been on water taxis a bunch for the show, for the morning show, the jam that I'm on, because they're very friendly. They let us just pop on and do reports with people as we go back and forth. And I believe I've been to their website and check it out. But during our break, which is coming up here momentarily, I will check to see about those water taxis. It's a great way to get around. They just opened for the season just a couple weeks ago. And what's really cool about the water taxis, they're expanding as they go. As the riverfront becomes more prominent, they're adding stops. I don't think a lot of people know that it goes all the way down to Chinatown. There's a North Branch stop off, too. It doesn't just go train station to Michigan Avenue. They've added a few stops along the way as the riverfront has continued to be developed, which is really cool. I think the water taxi is a great way to get around. Because, you know, that distance from the train stations to North Michigan Avenue, that's not nothing, no great way to get there. Walking is, it's a long walk. It's at least a mile, if not more, where you're going to eventually end on up. Cabs would be cost you, what, 10, 15 bucks? An Uber, forget about it. You're going to be waiting forever to get one. The water taxi really is an efficient way to bounce around. It makes those trips in like 4 or 5 minutes. And at least one of the captains is a really funny guy. He'll give you sort of the architectural tour as you go about at 7 in the morning as well. We'll check on that. And 312-981-7200 or Lauren or Steve or Elif, if you have other surprising great ideas for what people can do today on a gorgeous day in Chicago, check it out. But we'll be back here on the stream on WGN right after this. Hey, before we talk about more things to do on a summer's like day here in early spring Chicago, doing a little ticket plug for John Williams' next Thomas Jefferson show. It's called America, Thomas Jefferson's Ticked. They go on stage on May 18th at Classic Cinema's Tivoli Theater out in Downers Grove, my hometown. Woot woot. Used to be able to go check out a movie for $1.50 there. That was the old ticket price, but it was always like the end of the run movies. So it was almost by the time they were on VHS, you'd be able to go to the Tivoli and check it out. On Friday nights, the Oregon guy would play, and then he'd come up and he'd descend beyond the stage and the movie would start. You're looking at me strangely, Elif. Have you ever been to the Tivoli Theater for an old-timey movie or anything?
No, but there was one in where I grew up, in the neighborhood that I grew up in, that I remembered they sold tickets for $2 for end of the run movies, too. So that's why I had that epiphany look on my face. I was like, wait,
epiphany-ish.
That's not so far-fetched.
Right. And the Tivoli Theater, as I'm on a little diatribe here, was built and started running before even talking movies came out, the talkies as they called it. So it's a couple years beforehand. So before you even had audio in the music or in the movies, besides just some instrumental, the Tivoli Theater was there. They did a big refurbishment of it. I don't know if that's when I was still out in Donners, but it looks great. It's awesome. So not only do they do movies, but they do Thomas Jefferson's Ticked. So tickets are $33. The best way to get your tickets is online at WGNRadio.com/Jefferson. They'll also do walk-up sales at their box office during movie showtime. So if you're out there to check a film, you can buy them at the door, too. And all that sponsored by Joint Relief Institute in Orland Park and Oak Park Park, Oak Brook, excuse me. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain, or jointreliefinstitute.com. Have you been to one of these, Elif? The president's talking with
For a second, I thought you were going to ask me if I had been to the Joint Relief Institute.
Well, have you?
John has.
Oh, I know. I've heard. He tells
no,
us
I
often.
I have not.
You haven't done one of the president's ones before?
I've been to the Joint Relief Institute,
okay.
But I've been to the president talks.
What'd you think?
They're really fun.
Yes.
And this Clay Jenkinson, who plays the president, he's so up on his stuff,
mm-hmm.
and he knows every single detail. If you ask him one question, something completely obscure about a president, what do you think about
X, Y, Z?
Anything.
Right, or what's his opinion on this? Or what, hey, especially Thomas Jefferson, of course, a lot of people know that if he owned slaves,
mm-hmm.
but also had relationships with slaves, and I hear that this guy can wax poetic about the conflict there and all sorts of things.
Yeah, his answer is always ready.
It's cool because I was talking to John about this. I was in for Amy Guth over the weekend for the Winters Business Lunch, and John and I chatted a bit about this off the air because John does the 10 to noon on Saturday. And because I love history. I love presidential history. I'm a history buff. Anything I can have. But for some reason, this sort of thing seemed a little strange to me. And John said, don't worry. That's exactly what everybody thinks before they go to one of these things. So I'm going. I'm definitely, John's going to make sure that I go to this one. I really want to check it out because these historians, and they've got to be able to play these characters. They probably, Thomas Jefferson, luckily, we have so much in his writings, whether it was, I don't know if he did any of the Federalist Papers, I can't quite remember, I don't think so, but certainly we have all of his letters that he wrote back and forth with John Adams, the president that came before him, who he was good friends with, then rivals, then good friends again towards death, which, by the way, they died on the exact same day, which was July 4th, which is crazy, 50 days after the after the Declaration of Independence. Anyways, I'm getting off track, but the point is that if you can, certainly check this thing out. So, again, it's sponsored by Joint Relief Institute, and the tickets are online at WGNradio.com/Jefferson. If I could talk to one president, living or dead, I think I would talk to Teddy Roosevelt. Elif, the same question. Do you have a presidential fascination with any of our former presidents? I guess we're our current president, too. We could probably talk to him if we wanted to. I don't know.
I don't think I'd want to talk to Obama I paid very close attention to his administration.
So you already know everything. You don't need to know anything
about him. I definitely wouldn't want to talk to Trump. Sorry to be so biased.
Okay. No, it's okay.
I'm going to have to think about it.
Yeah, Teddy Roosevelt is a very interesting president who I'd love to talk to. He dealt with his wife and his mother dying on the same day when he was in the State Assembly in New York, and then he moved out west to forget his troubles. He came from an extremely wealthy family, but somehow identified with the everyday common man, a Republican who broke up trusts. Anyways.
That's the one that I first went to, one of the presidential talks,
uh-huh.
and I loved his performance.
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool, Jenkinson.
Yeah, and Teddy Roosevelt's a fascinating character in and of itself. Hey, before we get to the news here, I wanted to do
I want to talk to the next one.
Oh, right.
Wouldn't you want to know?
Who are you? I think that'd be the first question.
Right. Save me a lot of grief. Just tell me who you are.
Well, you're a news guy, Steve, but seriously, is there anyone, let's say you could actually suspend reality and have dinner or lunch or have a conversation with one of them. Who would it be? I mean, I would want to talk to all of them personally.
What about Nixon?
Nixon would be a great one. And we do have a lot on Nixon. Nixon talked a lot. He wanted to really rebuild his image after 74 until he died in 94, I believe. So he lived for about 20 years after his presidency. But that'd be a fascinating conversation. Bert, Steve?
Yeah, I think you could find a reason to talk to any of them.
Yeah.
I mean, Lincoln, obviously.
Right.
But I think Jefferson's right up there.
Yeah, I think Truman would be fascinating. Ask about, the dropping of the bomb, and he never wanted to be president, became president. I could go on forever about this sort of stuff.
Talk to Eisenhower about all the people he didn't like.
Yeah, Eisenhower would be great on about the military-industrial complex, too. Boy, I really nerded out in these last 10 minutes on the show. That's okay, though. It is, we got almost up to 1:30, which was perfect. We'll talk about a few other things you can do outside. That's what we were supposed to talk about during this segment. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And after the news, I never even heard that this was coming here, Bertrand. It's Rain, a tribute to the Beatles, on stage at the Cadillac Palace, just coming up here, this weekend.
That's the Cirque du Soleil show, isn't it?
Yeah, and they're just here for a day. So, is it the Cirque du Soleil show, or is that, no, that's a different
not
one.
Okay.
No, sorry. It is a tribute to the Beatles. I heard about the Cirque du Soleil one. This is not that. This is a musical. Oops. Oh, I'm not going to ask. No, maybe you're right. Clearly, I've not done as much research on this as I should.
So, Abraham Lincoln, I think, if I had to choose.
We're going to talk to Mark Lewis, who is the original keyboardist for this show, what it's all about, and more. I like that, Steve. In the S's. That's good. I guess in the F's would be bad.
Anytime you're in the F's.
And the T's is no good.
Isn't it nice how they sort of bunch each other?
They do. I never thought of it
that. I always thought of that. Like, once we're in the S's, things are okay.
Yeah, well, we're in the S's for, you said, tomorrow, and then back down to the F's for a little bit. That's okay. I guess as long as we don't hit the T's, I'm okay. But as long as we don't do that. Anyways, we're going to be talking about... I didn't even know that this show... And this is probably not the best thing to say leading into the interview. But I didn't know that this show was coming to Chicago. And I'm sure that they're happy to get the word out. I'm sure a lot of people do know about it. But we're talking about Rain. A tribute to the Beatles presents the Best of Abbey Road Live. And chatting online about it right now is Mark Lewis. Mark Lewis is the co-founder, the manager, and the original keyboardist... And Mark, thanks so much for joining us here on WGN on the stream.
My pleasure. It's great to be here.
I'm sure a lot of people know. I didn't mean to set that up by saying not everyone knows the show is coming, because they better. You know, we're so used to shows running for such a long time here in Chicago that you hear about a show, and maybe you just don't think, I'm not going to go right away, and I'll put it off. But, man, if they better go soon. This is it. The two-day,
right,
the two shows.
Hear about it after it left.
Yes, you don't want to do that.
No.
Tell us about
we don't want that.
Tell us about the show, because, you know, a lot of musical acts have now taken to the stage and kind of turned into a musical. I've seen Jersey Boys a few times where they tell a story along with singing the songs. What does Rain, a tribute to the Beatles, look, sound, and feel like?
Well, what it is it takes you through a history of the Beatles from when they first arrived in the United States and performed on the Ed Sullivan Show through their movie years into the Rubber Soul and Revolver era and into the Shea Stadium concert through a lot of the Sgt. Pepper album, and now we're specializing a section on Abbey Road because it's the 50-year, would you believe, anniversary of Abbey Road. And we do this not just coming on stage and playing the songs, which is like the big part, but it's also a full production with incredible lighting and production and video content that goes along with the music and an absolutely amazing cast. And we've been getting phenomenal reception wherever we've played. The new show with the Abbey Road section has been absolutely killing it. We do almost all of side two of Abbey Road, which has been blowing people away. We always try to do stuff that's not just the hits. We do the hits. We do a little of everything. But we try to hit stuff that are favorites, and you go, wow, I never expected to hear that live. Stuff from Sgt. Pepper, stuff from Abbey Road, and I don't mean just the Come Together or the A Little Help from My Friends off Sgt. Pepper, but, you know, A Day in the Life and She's Leaving Home and, you know, You Never Give Me Your Money and all that. I mean, it absolutely leaves the audience blown away.
I imagine.
I myself have seen the show so many times. When I go out on the road, I'm not out on the road all the time, but it really blows my mind, the quality, to hear a song like Because, with all that incredible harmony performed live, is absolutely mind-boggling. And it's not just a great musical experience, it's actually kind of an emotional experience what the show does, even when you've seen it before.
I imagine that playing beyond just the hits is not only great for the audience members who love the Beatles, who could recognize every song and sing along, and to be able to kind of tickle their brain with stuff maybe they haven't heard as much, but it must be great for a new generation of Beatles fans, too, who only know the hits, to experience a little bit more of the quote-unquote deeper cuts?
Absolutely. You know, people often ask me, what is it that's so special about the Beatles that people are still going out to see concerts, Beatle-type concerts live, and buying the albums and seeing the movies after 50 years? And when you see our show, you'll understand it. It's the depth and quality of the musicianship that the Beatles had, the writing ability, the singing ability, the personalities, all of it. They had the whole whole package. And that's what the show tries to deliver to the people. And there's so much great music that, you know, when I joke and say this is kind of an obscure song, there are no obscure songs with the Beatles. There are lesser hits, you know, that weren't the singles, but I think most Beatle fans know just about all of the songs. And those that aren't Beatle fans often become Beatle fans after seeing Rain.
All right, Mark, I'm looking at this list, and you're co-founder, manager, and original keyboardist. You do the lights, too? You run on the curtain there? I mean, you do everything there.
No, I just was a guy that loved playing keyboards and loved the Beatles. And, you know, it was a very awkward position to be in because the Beatles were a four-piece band. Mm-hmm. And I was always the fifth guy in the band. And people would go, what do you do? There were only four Beatles. And I go, yeah, well, listen to their records. And keep in mind that they didn't do a lot of this music live. So I don't do the curtain and I don't do the lights, but there was a lot to do with trying to, accompany the Beatles when you got orchestrations off of Sgt. Pepper and Abbey Road and the White Album and Magical Mystery Tour. And even, we get it down to even the hand claps on I Saw Her Standing There and everything. All come from the keyboard, so there's lots to do.
That's my job. It's probably an obvious answer, but are you a Beatles aficionado? Have you always been a super fan, I guess you could say? Or did you grow an appreciation as you took on this show? Or is it a little bit of both?
I'd say a little bit of both. You know, I was a big Beatles fan. When I saw them on, I actually am old enough to say I saw them when they performed on the Ed Sullivan Show, the original time.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran out and bought the album, and I was blown away by the fact that there were so many guys that sang lead. They played their own instruments. They wrote songs. They harmonized. They looked different. They sounded different. Everything about them. When I bought the album, you know, and brought it home, it blew my mind how I loved every song on the album. In those days, you buy an album, it was usually like the hit song they have out is on the album, and then a bunch of stuff that sounds exactly like the hit song, and that's not how it was. And so I grew up being a Beatles fan, but being a keyboard player, I kind of tended to go towards, at that time, groups that had an organist, you know, like the Animals, and later the Doors, mm-hmm. and Vanilla Fudge, and stuff like that. But I was always a Beatles fan. And once I got into looking at the challenge of doing a lot of the Beatles material, I realized once you dissect the music and start figuring it out, you realize just how complicated and challenging it is to pull this stuff off live.
Yeah.
So to me, the more I did it, the more of a fan I became.
So I'm looking at the tour for you guys, and boy, you're keeping busy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of Beatle fans
out
there.
Yes.
And Rain has a reputation for always delivering the goods. You know, we always change the show around, and we always try to give the people something that's different from what we did the last time we were in their city. And last time we did the entire Sgt. Pepper album, and live. And this time we're doing a lot of the Sgt. Pepper, but we made some room so we could do a lot of the Abbey Road album, more than we've ever done. And it's really exciting, and it's just I've never in my over 40-some years with the band seen the kind of reaction that we're getting from an audience, that we're getting from the current line, the current set list that we're performing now.
I imagine one of the sales pitches is, you know, hey, you love the Beatles, you got to go there. But let's say someone is, you know, maybe their kid isn't as into it as mom or dad is, or grandma or grandpa is. What a great opportunity to bring someone along and show them why you love the Beatles.
Absolutely. You know, I always say if you're a Beatles fan, it's a must. But if you're not a Beatles fan, it's even more of a must because it'll make you a Beatles fan. You know, people that scratch their heads and go, I like the Beatles, but I was never that much into them, you know, and they know the hits. They come and see the show maybe because they're with somebody that's a big Beatles fan or whatever the reason band, maybe, and then they come out and they start listening to the records again, and it's like they rediscover some of the songs they never even listened to that closely. And that's what makes being with a band like Rain so great, is that even though it's not our music, it's the Beatles' music, we get the opportunity to bring it to people live, which the Beatles stopped doing in around 1966, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of the music that they did in the studio, from that point on, they never performed live. So it makes it fun because we bring it to audiences live, and that's, for us, the challenge and the excitement and the fun.
It's Rain, a tribute to the Beatles. I just went on the Broadway in Chicago website, looked up at their ticket portal. There's still tickets available to both shows this Sunday. Their show at 2 o'clock and at 7:30, so a nighttime Sunday show. And I got to say, with so many musicals in town now that we cannot, that most people cannot afford to go see, I'm happy to see that the tickets are affordable for folks that want to go out and check it out.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. You know, to get the people to come in, you know, and to make it affordable for it, to have tickets that are affordable for everyone. And they're all great seats.
Yeah, they really, really are. Hey, Mark, thanks a lot, and we appreciate you stopping on by.
All right, well, thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
720 WGN are technically on the stream here as the White Sox are playing on the mothership, and I'm joined by my good friend. We can call each other good friends, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Janae Myers, the CEO of Chicago Cares. Thanks for stopping by today.
I was so happy to leave the office when I got the call.
How was your walk?
I cabbed over. I'm going to walk back.
Okay.
Let's try to get here on time.
Right, but even the walk to the cab.
It was amazing.
Right.
It's so beautiful out. The sun's out. It's probably almost 70. This is a gorgeous Chicago day.
I don't even care that it's going to cool down midweek because it's going to rebound. It's like, it's just nice to get a taste.
Yep.
Usually we get a taste like in February, early March. It felt like we didn't get any tastes.
Not this winter.
We didn't get any sampling, so it didn't feel like it was real.
No.
Now I'm like, okay,
this is happening.
This is going to happen. Also happening this week, this is technically day two of National Volunteer Week.
Yes.
Talk to us about that.
So, you know, April is Volunteer Month, and this is Volunteer Week, and it's just, you know, as we celebrate many things and have kind of months to reflect back. That's right, for everything. This is Volunteer Month and Week, and, you know, so many volunteers. Our city is powered by volunteers in so many different ways. The history of Chicago was rebuilt by volunteers after the Chicago Fire.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Interesting tip, right? Mm. And when you think about just the civic fabric of Chicago, it is built with so many people giving their time, talent, and treasure to make this city what it is. When you look at business and government and the nonprofit sector, like, they all have to work together to make this city what it is. So
I guess it makes sense. Chicagoans are proud of the neighborhoods that they live in, and we roll up our sleeves and get things done as Midwesterners. So I guess it goes hand in hand that Chicagoans in the suburbs as well, we're volunteer oriented.
Yes, we very much are. And it's amazing to be one of the largest serving volunteer organizations in the city of Chicago. Chicago Cares has been around now for almost April's also our birthday, so it'll be 28 years, which is crazy to think. And, you know, we existed before the internet when it was hard to find opportunities.
Well, I was going to say, you guys make it so easy to find volunteering. I don't know how you did it without the internet, just spreadsheets and
spreadsheets,
people on the phone.
Notes,
yeah.
All the things,
yes. So tell us what Chicago Cares is, because as people get inspired, you know, and I think this is always the struggle, and we talk about this, that people, I think, most of us have the intention of, I want to volunteer. But if you're relying on maybe the churches that you don't go to in the neighborhood, or maybe you don't, that's not where you go, the school, it's almost hard to find a project that fits kind of like what you want to do, but not with what you guys do.
Not with Chicago Cares. So Chicago Cares, again, a nonprofit agency and organization, been around for almost 28 years. And we mobilize Chicagoans and volunteers to help strengthen the city of Chicago. We believe in the power of connection, and we believe that volunteering is a vehicle and a way for people to meet each other, to go outside of your neighborhood, to get to some place that you've never been before and you might have a certain perception about.
Mm-hmm.
But when you volunteer and you meet other people and you get face-to-face and you're proximate with another human being that you might have thought, oh, well, that only happens over there in that community or that neighborhood, volunteering is a way to become an equalizer and get on the same playing field. And
to do something with someone else where you're both, you know, shoveling mulch or
together.
You are both doing the work in service of the need versus in service of just, oh, I should do this for those poor people over there, right? That is a misconception, I think, a lot about volunteering that Chicago Cares is trying to flip.
Right, and I think that, unfortunately, the word charity has been kind of, has that connotation now of just giving to someone else, where it's really, when you talk about volunteering and spending time with someone in another neighborhood, it's really a partnership. It's really taking ownership and empowering each other. And I know we're using kind of glowing terms, but like when you actually do it, it does leave you feeling
that
way.
That's absolutely what it feels like. And, you know, I think for so many folks who, you know, are very comfortable in the bubble of their neighborhood and or downtown.
And I get it. It happens. You can get in these bubbles. We all do, politically, socially, everything.
It is so easy. But when we challenge ourselves to go outside those bubbles, I think we really start to realize that, again, those perceptions start to fall away.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the commonalities in people, and you can do that through connection. Again, the service and the volunteering is kind of a means to the end. But the end is for us to grow greater empathy for each other, better understanding. I think we stay so polarized in our bubbles, but that can start to break down when we get together. And that's an important aspect of volunteering.
Glinda was only able to help Dorothy when she popped the bubble. That's all. I mean, like, that's not the lesson. We learned that young child.
Yes.
That should carry through. So what sorts of projects do you do? Because I imagine some people say, well, there's always, and I'm just spitballing here.
Yes.
I don't know. I want to, you know, plant trees for one of the Earth Days that are coming up or something like that. You've got something like hands-on. What if someone's like, I don't ever want to touch dirt, and I also do not want to touch any dogs or cats?
Yes.
There's things for everyone.
There's things for everyone. We also have skilled-based volunteering, right? We merged with another organization, but we have this program called Skills for Good, where we bring in volunteers to not only help Chicago Cares, but to help other agencies with different things that they might need, smaller, like 10-hour kind of based skills-based projects where you can do from your desk. Right, but then we also have opportunities to get you out and about in the neighborhoods and connecting with others. All of that is so key and important. This time of year, there's lots of like environmental kind of cleanups, neighborhood cleanups. Englewood's got one coming up at the end of the month. But then there's also things with people, right? So we have great programs with seniors. We're one of the biggest programs working with our Chicago Public Housing Authority senior groups, and they're in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't really think about that, but that's one of the things that happen sometimes when, again, these bubbles, and you think about folks and the opportunity they have. Well, the older you get, the more limited you are to go out of your home,
right,
and to interact with others. So, right, so that interaction with those seniors are such quality programs and opportunities to make connections both generationally across generations, but then again, neighborhood by neighborhood. So you can, again, learn a little bit more about folks. So if someone from the north side went down the south side to volunteer at Lincoln Perry, they might run into someone who marched with Dr. Martin Luther King.
Right. And you really get an access to tap into a history that's there. I imagine it's not only about crossing neighborhoods, but helping fix your own, too.
That's right. What's in your own backyard? You know, really inspiring people to get up off the couch.
Right.
And look around your own community. I think oftentimes we are complainers, right, about certain things that are...
No, never. Let me check the text line, see if anyone's complaining today. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, but that's the thing. Like, we like to complain about things, but what are we doing? You know, I'll say I was incredibly disappointed with the voter turnout. This last election, this last mayoral and local election, we can't continue to complain about things if we're not willing to get out and vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had a wonderful opportunity to travel the world where people are still dying for the right to vote. And it's something we take for granted
here.
And, you know, those kinds of things, I think we have to show up, right? We have to show up when it's time to vote because that's our civic duty, but we have to show up when it's time to do something in our neighborhood. When you, you know, to see something, say something.
Yeah.
See something, do something. Because
like
if we're
that.
Not all doing something, we're all just like sitting on social media,
right,
and commenting on, you know, influencers that really, it's not real life.
I'm feeling really personally attacked right now, Janae. No, I think it was this weekend I did a lot of, Enrique and I sat on the couch a little bit. And yeah, I did some working too. And after a day of that, it does become a little bit, well, what do? Go for a walk, do this. What an opportunity there when the next time you find yourself a little bored. Or a little just, you know, you could fill some time.
Yep.
Instead of just going for a walk, which is a wonderful thing to do, just pop onto the website and at least start to commit, at least start to put yourself in a, thinking about looking.
That's right.
And I know that that seems silly because I imagine the hardest thing for your organization is getting the person to show up the first time.
Yeah.
Because after that, if it's a regular volunteer project, then it's easier. Or if they're invested in it, then they at least make it a monthly, a yearly, whatever it might be, whatever works for someone. It's about getting them in the door and then out the first time.
That's right. And for us, too, at Chicago Cares, we're super agnostic. We would love you to stay volunteering with us for forever.
Right.
But if you find your cause and you're ignited by a passion for something, and because we introduced you to an organization, to a neighborhood, to a community, and now you've sought out ways to get involved on your own, that's a dream for us. We just want to be that kind of entry point for inspiring volunteerism, again, sparking that passion towards service and others. I have so many friends who work in corporate America, and they're constantly reaching out to me to be like, Janae, I mean, I need my 9-to-5 job because the paycheck is good,
right,
but my heart's not happy. And I always suggest volunteering or getting on a board. And how can you get involved in other ways civically and in your community to give back? And that's some of it. I mean, some of us are, you know, working to pay the bills and take care of everything else. But that kind of heart happy, which is so important, I think, in people's lives and the drive, the purpose that I think we are all looking for, can help start to be filled just by finding some opportunities. So look at Chicago Cares. We're a great way to start that exploration.
That's a great way for volunteers to find things. What about folks out there that are working with a group that struggles to find volunteers? I know a lot of people out there are already saying, I volunteer all the time. We could use 10 more people at our whatever it might be. Do you guys offer help to these new groups? How could they find out more information?
Yes, please reach out to us too. We really believe in teaching other nonprofit agencies and organizations how to fish, meaning how do they get volunteers.
Oh, I was going to say, if there's a fishing one, I'll go out there in a heartbeat, catch some walleye, some northern, and we'll give it to whatever cause it needs to be.
That's the example, right? Like, how do we teach them how to recruit volunteers, how to create programs that will make an opportunity sticky to bring people back? So Chicago Cares, because we're experts in this, we are teaching other agencies and organizations how to do that, how to give them those skills to bring back so they can have an amazing volunteer experience. So we want to be your resource for all things volunteerism, and we're also, again, incredibly happy and agnostic to point to the right direction when it doesn't fit for what we have, right? If we don't have those opportunities for you, we know so many agencies and partners within, you know, the city of Chicago that we'd be happy to make those referrals and send you to a place that might suit your needs better.
Study after study shows that either it's millennials or now, I guess Gen X or Gen Zs, whatever the next generation of kids are, yeah, Zs, they value a company and a job that provides some volunteer times, and you guys help link corporations and companies with volunteer opportunities, too.
Yes.
They're probably one of your biggest drivers.
They are. I mean, that's our biggest source of revenue is corporations. They are constantly looking for opportunities, and it is not enough for companies to say, check the box, we did something. Those days are really over, and corporate social responsibility and how people are thinking about things, I mean, we're, you know, boycotting companies if they're not taking proper stances on major social issues,
right,
let alone providing those opportunities for you to engage back into the community. So Chicago Cares works with probably over 100 companies each and every year to get involved and give back. We really work on customizing that too so that they are meeting a need of the community versus us just going, oh, we did a project so you can feel good about yourself.
Right.
It really is trying to make sure those community needs are being met. I think the thing that we sometimes don't realize is this gorgeous gem of downtown that we have is how many wonderful things are already happening in our neighborhoods. There's already, you know, collective impact efforts, which is means a lot of people working together towards the same thing. I know I'm using a little jargon there.
That's okay.
Right? But getting people to play into already existing efforts and the leadership that's happening in neighborhoods and communities is so key because you become a catalyst for more change. And the thing that a lot of our neighborhoods suffer from is lack of resources and lack of networks. So when we can help become that connector and bring people in, amazing things happen. Sometimes a corporate volunteer or a group, they'll come and they'll be, you know, at a school or a community center and they just fall in love with the experience and the neighborhood and the students, and then they're buying computers for the whole school.
Right.
Right? I mean, so it's those kind of extra effects that happen, but you have to put yourself there, get proximate, see what the real needs are, see what the real opportunities are in community, and then see how how those resources can connect.
Where can people find out more information?
ChicagoCares.org.
That's great. And you're right, because some people are like, oh, this community is blighted. Why don't they fix what they're doing? It's like, they're trying.
They're trying.
They need you.
And they don't have the resources. We forget that systematically we have under-resourced communities for years and years, and it takes a lot to recover from that. So we've got to do all we can to continue to make investments.
And really quickly, I know we got to go to news, but 708 said, I'm on a committee of four people in my village. People talk the talk but are not willing to walk the walk. Let's all take a big step forward, huh?
Yes.
And National Volunteer Week is a good way to do
it. It's a great way to do it.
Janae, always good to see you. Appreciate it. And this is John Hanson in for John Williams. Steve, I'm just watching. I got the Cubs game on one of these TVs here. I don't know if you just saw, but Anthony Rizzo with an RBI single to make it 4-0 Cubbies on the north side. But a scary situation at the ballpark, and they're just, I mean, this literally just happened. A line drive by Rizzo up the middle went off the pitcher's head. Pitcher Jameson Taillon, the starter, he's still in there. Looks like he seems to be okay. Was throwing some warm-up pitches. It went off the top of his cap, but a liner, and it ricocheted about 30 feet into center field. So an obviously scary situation. Cubs fans got to be happy about scoring the run, but oh, that was one of those dangerous ones, that line drive going straight up the middle. And obviously we hope he's okay. Pitcher's going to stay in the game and continue on. But again, that was at Wrigley Field just moments ago, a line drive off the pitcher's head. Kind of surprised in this day and age with concussion checks and the things they do along those lines that this pitcher is still in this ball game. But again, it's 4-0 Cubs on their home opener on the north side. A gorgeous day. Oh, that was a scary situation. I was watching it when Steve was giving that report. Okay, we're going to change gears here. We'll keep you posted on that and what's happening, of course, with the White Sox at Guaranteed Rate Field as well. But when we have breaking news or changing news and anything in our city that has to do with the mayor or the city council, we call Heather Sherrone of the Day. DailyLine.net. Heather, thanks for joining us in a pinch again.
Happy to do it. Thanks, John.
All right, so what we're going to talk about today is something we've been talking about for months and years, really, the development of Lincoln Yards. And we were all set with a vote today. It's not happening. Heather, what was the vote? And then we'll get to why it's not happening.
Well, late last night, Lori Lightfoot, who, of course, is the mayor-elect of Chicago, put out a statement calling on Mayor Rahm Emanuel to delay the vote of the Finance Committee, which was set for this morning and which would have set up a final vote on Wednesday. She said basically that the city needed and her team needed more time to take a look at the deal, which would build a whole new neighborhood between Lincoln Park and Bucktown with 6,000 homes and all sorts of shops and stores and office buildings. So then this morning, just after 9 o'clock, Rahm Emanuel shocked everyone at City Hall by basically saying, okay, Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot, I've asked the city council to hold off on a vote. And it was bedlam. I am not exaggerating.
This has been the mayor's pet project, and I get his answer, and, you know, I think it's respectful to say this is what the new administration is at least wanting, a pause on this thing. I'm just surprised he did it. Is there something we don't know here?
I mean, that's what we're all trying to figure out. And then when we were all sort of, you know, trying to figure out why the mayor had done this, because you're exactly right, this was sort of number one on his final to-do list, his bucket list, as he leaves office. He's got about a month left, and Wednesday's his final city council meeting, so that's really his last opportunity to get anything passed. We ran into Alderman Brian Hoskins, whose second ward includes Lincoln Yards, who said that he basically didn't care what the mayor and the mayor-elect thought, and that he was going to ask his colleagues to hold the vote regardless of what the mayor said, and that he was confident it would pass.
Wow.
Which is, you know, left turn after left turn after left turn. So Alderman Pat O'Connor, who, let's not forget, was ousted after 36 years on the city council just a week ago, called the committee to order a little bit late, but said that there would be no vote today, but that he would schedule a special meeting of the Finance Committee Wednesday morning. That would give the Finance Committee one last chance to advance the Lincoln Yards subsidy, which is $900 million, to the full city council meeting later in the day on Wednesday. So since about 10:45, they've been talking about the finer points of the Lincoln Yards development. We're about most of the way through 2 hours of public testimony, which seems to be pretty split between between proponents and opponents. But what will happen on Wednesday, that is anyone's guess at this moment.
Is this maybe a way of giving Lori Lightfoot what she asked for while not really giving her what she asked for? Because she asked for an information gathering session. O'Connor could argue, well, we did that Monday, and now Wednesday we're going to vote.
And I would think you were 100% correct, except for that statement from Mayor Rahm Emanuel. It would be an unprecedented erosion of the mayor's power, which has really been unchallenged in the 8 years of his tenure, to basically either allow or delay city council actions on items. Never before of a project of this caliber, if it moves forward, it would move forward over the objections of the mayor. So we are once again in unprecedented territory here.
It's interesting because, in a way, this lame duck session that we're in, or this lame duck period of time we're in, kind of gave some cover to the project in a way. The timing of it was actually fortuitous for folks that were in favor of this because, you know, because and then Lori Lightfoot, when she comes in, well, the project's already well underway and yada, yada, yada. I mean, like, it almost gave them a little cover, and this kind of blows that cover away.
It absolutely does. And Alderman O'Connor has said essentially back to the Sun-Times last week, he said, look, I would think Mayor-elect Lightfoot would be glad to not have this on her plate when she takes office. And now, you know, we're in a situation where she will either achieve her first victory as mayor of Chicago or suffer her first defeat more than a month before she's even inaugurated into office. And somehow that will also be a referendum on her predecessor, Rahm Emanuel. And although they've both said nice things about each other lately, there is no love lost there. And it's clear that Lightfoot was pressuring Emanuel to put a stop to this. The question I can't really answer that is whether or not, A, the mayor really wants this to stop, or B, if the city council will even listen to him.
Here's the thing, too, and I don't mean to overstate what Lincoln Yards is, but it is, in many ways, a microcosm of debates that are happening nationwide about corporations getting tax breaks, about the Progressive Caucus and the power that they have to stop gentrification or changing neighborhoods, versus where money is and development is, and also that a lot of people, even left-leaning people, and I conclude myself in one of them, that development is a good thing for a city if it's done the right way, and it's a sign of good times. So this battle has really blown up into something bigger than just, and it's still a big project no matter what, but it's blown up to be bigger than itself.
Right. It's really turned into a shorthand way of people arguing over the big issues facing Chicago. Do we have enough affordable housing? How are we working to prevent displacement and gentrification? How do we ensure that city money benefits the many as opposed to the few? And what does the Chicago Post Rahm Emanuel look like? He was very pro-business, very pro-development, and he's very proud of that. Does that change under Lori Lightfoot, and to what degree does it change? You know, what's interesting is that the planning commissioner, David Reifman, who reports to Rahm Emanuel and, you know, was appointed by Rahm Emanuel, gave sort of an impassioned defense once again of Lincoln Yards and why this is the right thing for the city to do at a time when Mayor Emanuel just said, hey, all right, go ahead, and I think it's still the right thing to do, but let's hold off in deference to the mayor-elect. So it just, you know, I wouldn't, for all the money in the world, attempt to predict what's going to happen on Wednesday.
Right, but we know something will, I guess we know something will or won't happen Wednesday, which is a strange way to say that.
We can narrow it down to those two options, John. Something will happen or something won't happen.
Either way, there will be news, I should say. You'll have something to say about what happens Wednesday, I should say.
Absolutely.
All right, where can people find out more information? Actually, if you got a 30-second elevator pitch, Heather Sharon, tell us about the Daily Line and where people can find out more information about all the great stuff you guys do.
So we're at thedailyline.net, and if you are interested in politics or policy in Chicago, you should be a subscriber. We offer a free daily email, and then we offer, really, if I may say so myself, the best political coverage of Chicago. If you want to know why people won last week, we can help you begin to put those pieces together. And we will tell you about what's coming down the pike as Mayor Lori Lightfoot picks up.
Heather, and you can say whatever you want, because guess what? No one else is on the line right now. Heather Cerrone, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Oh, an ever-evolving story. WGN, will that be the numbers if you're listening to us on the air? You're not. You're listening to us on the stream here at WGNRadio.com or on the WGN app, and we appreciate you for tuning in. John Hanson here. Normally it's John Williams till 3, but John Hanson here today. And after myself, Ro and Anna will be on at 3 o'clock, and then everyone will join harmoniously onto the regular broadcast at the conclusion of the White Sox game. And we're following what's happening on the north side as well, with the Cubbies winning 6-0, or leading, 6-0 early in that game at Wrigley Field for their home opener as well. One of the big stories to come out over the weekend was new Governor Pritzker signing a bill raising the legal age to buy tobacco from 18 to 21. That's been the law in Chicago, I believe, for some time, trying to remember exactly what. I didn't realize this was also for e-cigarettes, too, so that's adding a nice wrinkle to the story here. Maybe wrinkle's an appropriate way to lead into this next person to chat with. Dr. Christine Argento, pulmonologist at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. Doctor, thanks so much for joining us here on WGN Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
I got a dumb question for you. So I'm trying, you know, I thought I knew all my doctors. A pulmonologist is different from a cardiologist. Do you work with the pulmonary valves and the movement of blood through our system? Am I getting that at all right?
Nope, not at all right.
All right. I was taking a real stab in the dark. What the heck's a pulmonologist?
I'm a lung doctor.
A lung.
So I work with the lungs, the bronchial tubes, everything in the chest other than the heart.
So, part of the cardiovascular system, I guess, sort of the respiratory. There we go.
Exactly.
Well, that's a great lead-in, doctor. Sorry about that. I guess it was a dumb question. Okay. Well, as someone who specializes in the lungs, you're just the person we want to talk to for this story. I imagine you guys are as in favor of this as anyone else.
Absolutely. I think this couldn't come soon enough. We were really happy to see this go through for cigarettes as well as particularly for e-cigarettes, which have really been on the rise lately and do seem to cause significant problems, primarily with addiction to nicotine and then causing future smoking problems in adults later in life when they start using e-cigarettes as teens.
Yeah, the e-cigarette thing is interesting because I've always thought, I'm for that. People that smoke a ton and have their whole lives, what a great way to wean off it. Maybe that works, and that works for some people, and there's cases of that. But then, of course, there exists this secondary market of people that start with these. They go the opposite way.
Right, exactly. And then we found that there are some side effects as well from the e-cigarettes, which, I don't think we've fully ascertained exactly what happens in the long term. They just haven't been around long enough.
Right.
But at least in the short term, we know that there are some irreversible effects that do happen in the lungs as a result of the e-cigarettes, particularly the flavored version. I think that some of the chemical compounds in there can cause some irreversible effects in the lungs, which is not ideal, especially in a younger population.
I got a lot of dumb questions. Anytime I talk to a doctor, I'm full of dumb questions. But my grandmother,
no such thing.
Yeah, well, my grandmother, rest her soul, and part of the reason why she died a little younger than other people in my family was she was a smoker, and quite a smoker from a generation of folks. I think a lot of people smoked in that generation. Probably she started smoking before we knew a lot about it, and that has a whole other debate and discussion about how that came about. But so she smoked for a long time. If someone gives up smoking, even in their 40s and 50s, obviously there's a lot of damage that's already been done in the lungs. Is some of that reversible?
So it's not reversible per se, but you do end up limiting the amount of damage to the lungs over time. So as you quit smoking, the damage starts to decrease, and so you end up kind of having a regular decline in lung function like you would normally have if you're a non-smoker. And so although the damage that's already been done is done, you then start preventing further damage from happening in the lungs.
I imagine you've seen lungs in all sorts of states, and I mean, it goes without saying that even smoking, I mean, what? I mean, is there any, this is a real, again, another dumb one, there's no safe amount of cigarette smoking that you can do. I have friends, and so I'm in my young 30s, or now almost mid-30s. I do have a few friends that smoke occasionally, but they say things like, well, I only have one or two a day. I mean, obviously, that's better than I imagine three packs a day, but I mean, you're still talking about long-term effects here.
Certainly. So there's definitely a dose-effect relationship. So certainly, the more you smoke, it's worse. But any amount of smoking really is not ideal for your lung health. Right. It certainly puts you at increased risk of lots of different things, but particularly lung cancer, which is what most people are concerned about.
So moving this age to 21, I imagine, in addition to the e-cigarette thing, which we talked about and is important, but, you know, obviously so much advertising before certainly was geared towards, and a lot of the pushing of smoking is geared towards kids. It's the cool thing to do. It's not, but this is what is pushed. And I imagine that by making, like, here's what I envision, is that obviously 16-year-olds couldn't go out and buy cigarettes anyways, but maybe they had an older brother who was 18, or another senior in high school who was 18. The access at 18 was way easier for a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old to be able to find a way to get those cigarettes. By making it 21, I feel like by the time you're 21, you're not buying cigarettes for 15-year-olds. You yourself are of a smarter age. Even if you're a non-smoker or a smoker, you're not passing that along to a younger child. And that by the time most people reach 21, they're not going to start smoking. Do you think both of those things are true?
Yeah, exactly right. And that's exactly what we're hoping for, is that, you know, by the time you reach 21, hopefully you won't be so tempted to start something like smoking. And then ideally, maybe you're off to college or whatnot, so that you're not providing cigarettes for a younger sibling or a younger person in your life.
Mm-hmm.
That would be ideal.
All right. So, Dr. Christine Argento, if you just, you know, the elevator pitch here for, it's been said millions of times, it's on every label, it's on every commercial, but if you could just kind of like paint a picture for what happens to a cigarette smoker, and maybe there's a kid listening out there that needs to hear this or why they shouldn't smoke e-cigarettes. I mean, you've seen lungs and what it does. Just walk us through the damage that is done.
Yeah, so I think, you know, initially it starts innocently enough and you're smoking and you don't feel anything and you don't feel any problems and you have no issues at all. So you don't think that one cigarette or a few cigarettes a day makes a difference. Eventually, I think you do become more short of breath. You might have a cough. You have a lot of cravings. So it does tend to really impair your life, or at least it impacts your life in the sense that your daily schedule is going to somewhat revolve around your smoking habit.
Physiologically, what's happening in the lung that creates that shortness of breath?
The shortness of breath is really the destruction of lung tissue. So we call that emphysema, and it's where the alveolar sacs or the air sacs in the lungs, they coalesce and they kind of become one, which is not ideal for how much, you know, you can breathe and how much oxygen goes back and forth between the bloodstream and your lungs. And so it just makes it overall difficult to breathe, but you're literally destroying the air sacs in your lungs. Mm. The part that helps you to breathe.
Obviously, that is not good. Well, Dr. Christine, I know a lot of people, and this passed overwhelmingly in both the House, the Illinois House, and the Illinois Senate, and you certainly obviously applaud the governor and his efforts here. And I feel like a lot of people have, you know, there's discussions of nanny state and free choices to do things, but sometimes we need a push, and again, this is for stopping a generation of young people from starting habits that will affect them for their entire lives and a shorter life at that.
Exactly. I think they'll thank us later.
I agree. All right, doctor, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
WGN. Well, 720 is what the signal is, which is the White Sox right now. We're live on WGNRadio.com and, of course, the app as well. And Lori Gottlieb, a psychotherapist, and you're an advice columnist for The Atlantic, right, as well, and also writing a really new book, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, joins me in studio. And Lori, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So I asked you off air, yeah, a lot of dumb questions today, but what is a psychotherapist versus a therapist versus a psychiatrist versus I don't know if I got them all, but walk us through what you do and the differences between some of these words.
It has to do with the different license. So I'm a marriage and family therapist, which is a psychotherapist. Somebody who has a PhD in clinical psychology will be a psychologist, and people who prescribe medication are psychiatrists.
Okay. I think I got it there. But you work with psychiatrists who do prescribe medication.
Yes. So if I have a patient who's taking antidepressants, but I'm doing talk therapy with that person, I work in conjunction with a psychiatrist.
Okay. Talk us about your book, because you were talking about how you also go see a therapist as a psychotherapist. So first and foremost, is that common in your industry?
I think it is, but I think that people don't talk about it, and I think our patients don't really think about that.
Right.
I think for some reason they think that we might have our lives together and that we don't need therapy.
That you have all the answers. Why would you need to talk to somebody else?
Right, right. And we don't. And I think but that makes us really effective, right? Because the reason that in the book I follow four patients, but I also follow a fifth patient, which is me, in therapy with my own therapist. And I do that because I didn't want to be the expert up on high. I wanted to show my humanity, because when I'm working with patients, my humanity is actually the most effective tool that I have in helping them.
You know, it's interesting. I was talking to you off the air about The Sopranos and how that was my introduction to the world of therapy. I think I knew about what therapists were, and I watched a Frasier, so I knew about Dr. Crane. That's, you know, through pop culture, that's a lot of ways people get into this sort of stuff. But Tony's therapist also saw a therapist, and that raised a query to me. But I guess, like you say, it's not only good for your own mental health, which is important. Do you find that you learn things too? Like what your therapist does, take some of those tools and use them with your patients? Or do you have your own set way of doing things and you're in those ways?
No, I learned a lot from him. You know, as a therapist, we don't get to see other therapists work because we're alone in the room with our patients. So, you know, he was kind of quirky and non-traditional. He had, you know, very good boundaries, but he brought his personality into the room, and it really taught me that I could be myself in the room with my patients. And I think also sometimes he used these great metaphors. Like at one point he said, you know, you remind me of this cartoon of this prisoner shaking the bars and he can't get out, but on the right and the left, the bars are open. And I think for so many of us, it was such a great metaphor because we feel trapped and yet the way out is right there. Mm-hmm. And so I, of course, then drove to my office and said that five times in the next 5 hours.
I gave no credit to
and didn't attribute it to my therapist.
Interesting you mentioned the personality thing, because I wonder when you're sitting in that room and you're chatting with someone or they're chatting with you and you're talking through these things, you imagine that it's only natural, I think, in your position to put up a barrier, a wall, to almost feel like you shouldn't be yourself, that you are this professional and you're doing this. So I imagine that's difficult for a lot of therapists or psychotherapists to go into that room and be themselves while also having that education, that background, and what the tools that they need to help someone.
I think we use both. We're very strategic and intentional in what we say, but we're also very human. And so we're reacting on both levels. And that was what I'm showing in the book, is that you see me in the room with my patients, and I'm very much a professional, but I'm me. And then you see me in the room with my therapist, and then I'm just a regular, you know, human being dealing with the daily problems of living.
Well, I imagine that you mentioned the four patients before yourself. Are they real patients? Are they based on caricatures of them? Are they've given you full credit to talk about the sorts of things they talk about? How was that in writing the book? That must be an interesting process to go through.
They're real people, and I have their permission, and I chose four very different people. You have sort of this narcissistic, sort of abrasive Hollywood producer who's very insulting to me at the beginning, but he's the guy I think that we come to love the most. You have this older woman who feels like she messed up her life, her adult children won't talk to her, and she has some marriages behind her, and she is about to turn 70 and wants things to change. You have a young person in her 20s who keeps hooking up with the wrong guys, and you have a young woman who's newly married and who is diagnosed with breast cancer. So you've got very different people, but I think that we can see aspects of ourselves in every single one of them.
Mm-hmm. And that, I imagine, helps break down the stigma. I mean, I think that we're having better conversations now than we were five or ten years ago about mental health issues. And you and I talked about that. Celebrities talk about this very openly. I think people in the office are much more comfortable saying, oh, my therapist thinks this, or I was talking to my therapist about that. I imagine we have a ways to go, but you must feel good about the direction we're headed as a country.
I do. I feel like so many people are finally able to talk about what they're struggling with. So there's the Facebook, Instagram version of life.
Right.
But I think everybody knows that that's not real. And more people don't want to feel alone in their struggles, and they're starting to open up and talk to people, whether that's a therapist or people in their lives. And there's not, you know, I think a lot of the shame around that has gone away. We still have a long way to go, though.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that for, like, major things, I think, you know, a lot of people are very able to go, well, you know, soldiers coming home, they experience PTSD. That seems like a very obvious thing that we all want to help our returning soldiers. But it's people in the supermarket. It's everyone. It's you and me. We're all dealing with a lot of different things. Obviously, it's a different degrees and different severities and different types of trauma. But I imagine that once a few of us start having those conversations, it becomes easier for the other people to have it too.
It does. So many men in particular come into my office and say, I've never told anyone this before. And then what they tell me, you know, I think it's going to be this big revelation, is so mild, in my opinion.
Really?
And
well,
so
you've heard a lot, I'm sure.
But I mean that they're embarrassed to talk to their guy friends about it. And I think women will say, I haven't told anyone this before, except for my mother, my sister, and my best friend. You know,
so they will open up
to somebody about it.
What is there a litmus test for knowing whether someone should seek out help from a mental health professional?
I think that we have this weird thing where we if something is wrong physically with us, we'll go to a doctor and get it checked out.
No problem.
But if something feels off with our emotions, we wait a long time. And I think that if you are suffering or if you feel like something is off, why not go see someone before it becomes a crisis? Because if you come later, it's much harder to treat and you've suffered unnecessarily.
Well, I think a lot of people wait for like certain benchmarks, a breakup, a divorce, or a change in the work situation. Moving to a new place, and then they go, well, that's why I feel like this. And either that's comforting to them, that there's a reason behind it, or that's the impetus. Now I'll go seek help because I had this big thing happen to me and it's trouble. But I think for the majority of us, it's, you know, a lot of everyday life things that happen over the course of time can really cause us trauma and anguish. And I think that sometimes we're waiting for the sign. And maybe that's because it's well behind us. It's not coming up. It's already passed.
That's right. I talk in the book about how there's no hierarchy of pain, that pain is pain. And so sometimes people think, well, you know, I'm feeling sad or I'm anxious, but I don't know why, you know, hashtag first world problems.
Right.
I have a roof over my head.
You're absolutely right with that. We all, we make excuses. We say, how could I? Yes.
Yeah, we minimize it. And what happens is if you tamp down the feelings, they actually get bigger. And they need air. And eventually it will come out in some way, but you don't want to wait for that to happen.
Okay, here's another myth, I imagine. Getting a therapist, that sounds too expensive. A psychotherapist, I can't afford that. Are insurance companies better than they used to be about helping out with mental health? Are they worse? Is it something that only people that have a bunch of disposable income can do?
Healthcare is really problematic in this country, whether it's for physical health or mental health. But there are clinics that are low cost or no cost. There are all kinds of ways that people can go see somebody, even if it's not, you know, it through their insurance plan.
Okay, so then another thing that I hear people talk about, and maybe this is as I think about these things, okay, how long do I need to go for? And I imagine it's a very personal individual. I imagine some people love, I listen to this podcast, these two women do this incredible podcast called My Favorite Murder, which sounds remote, you know, a little morose. It's a great podcast, they're comedians, they're funny, and one talks openly about their regular appointment, and they swear by it. It's like what they look forward to in the week, and they are going to do it till the day that they die. Is that what more of us need to be doing, or is it more of an individual case by case? See how you feel.
I think that's a misconception about therapy, that people are afraid to go because they think, if I go there, I'll be stuck there
forever.
For years.
Yes, right?
I'll never leave.
Right.
And that's just not true. From the beginning, we want to know what your goals are, why you're there, and what you want to accomplish when you're there. And we assess as we go along where you are. And people leave, even, you know, I don't know if anyone is quote-unquote finished, meaning they leave when they feel good enough. They don't have to, you know, and they can come back if they want.
Right.
But we don't want to keep you there. We want to encourage your independence. We want to help you learn how to deal with your own struggles and manage better. We want to hold up a mirror to you and help you see your blind spots and the ways you keep shooting yourself in the foot and ending up in the same place over and over. And once you get to those things, you're much better equipped to deal with navigating day-to-day life. And so you don't necessarily need us at that point.
I don't know if you were prepared to have to answer for all my therapy questions here today. You're kind of acting as my radio therapist at this exact moment. But I got so many of them. And the another one that I hear people say, and maybe it's just because Tony Soprano used to always say this, you're spending a lot of money, or maybe your healthcare provider is spending some money on this session, and you're not getting a ton of answers, or you're talking in circles, or you are getting answers, but it's something, oh, your friend could have helped you out with that, or your mom or your brother. What is it about having a professional there that, I mean, obviously it must be the years of training and that goes into why someone should talk to a professional as opposed to just their friend?
So in the book, I talk about the difference between idiot compassion and wise compassion. And your friends will give you idiot compassion, which is that if you say, my boss is such a jerk, or this is what my partner did, or whatever, your friend is going to take your side. A therapist is going to help you look at maybe your role in the situation or your response to the situation so that you can change the pattern that's going on instead of just feeling victimized by what's happening.
What made you decide to write the book?
I wrote the book because I really wanted to bring people back into the therapy room and let them see real people getting through real struggles, and also demystify what therapy is. I think people have such strange notions about what it is.
Right, and that's a really good point. And I've never been to a therapist. I came close once. My parents and I talked about it when I was kind of in the doldrums for an extended period of time. And I think had I not gotten a job that really interested me, I might have been there a couple weeks later. I don't know. I picture exactly what I've seen on TV. I picture the couch and the silent mms and ahs from a gentleman or a woman on the other end with a pencil. I picture what should be a judgment-free zone, but maybe the feeling of judgment. Maybe dispel some of that for me. What happens when someone walks into your office?
When someone walks into my office, I want to hear more about what's going on in their life. You know, it's a very rich human experience. It's not the cold, distant person who says,
right.
And our time is up, and
yes,
you're sort of like, what happened?
Yes.
Right. No, it's not that. And in fact, Eva Longoria is developing the book for a television show, and what I want to portray in that is just a person who happens to be a therapist, because I think that that's a much more realistic view of, you know, who your therapist is and what your therapist is thinking, so that people feel more comfortable getting help if they need it.
Where do we need to go still more as a country? Is it about having more of these conversations? I guess the country, limited to that, the world as a whole. Is it about more people going into therapy, or just at least feeling comfortable with the idea of it, or at least talking about it openly and having no issue whatsoever in doing so?
One of the things I see, no matter what people are coming in for, is an underlying sense of loneliness. I feel like we aren't connecting. We don't have organic opportunities to connect face-to-face with another
person. Is it social media? I mean, is it really,
I think people are driving into it? People are walking around with their phones. And, you know, when you're in a therapy room, nothing's pinging or vibrating or beeping. There are no screens on the wall. Like when you're in a restaurant, your phones aren't out. It's a very different experience. And physiologically, your heart rate gets lower. You're calmer. More people need to be face-to-face with the people who matter to them in their lives. So a lot of couples will say, at night we're co-computing, you know, we're sitting in the same room and we're on our computers. You need to be able to have a conversation, go for a walk, you know, have a meal without any screens. Really connect with the people who are important to you.
What are the best ways to convince someone that you might love that they should maybe explore this route to prevent, God forbid, them hurting themselves, or to a lesser degree just continuing to be sad for a long time? Someone who's really skeptical, what's a good way to maybe say this might be for you?
I think I'll start with the wrong way, which is the wrong way is you have a problem.
Right, okay.
Right? Because nobody wants to hear that. I think the approach is that I really love you and care about you, and I see that you're struggling, and I don't want to see you struggle so much. Maybe we can go together, or you can go and talk to somebody, and you don't have to stay. Just go see what it is.
Parents and grandparents, is there an age too young? Is it, I mean, obviously when you're talking about teenagers, you're talking about a lot of hormonal issues. Everyone has a bad day when you're a teenager, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they need medical help, or they need professional help, I should say. But at what point is it okay, or should a kid maybe be considered a teenager, considered to go talk to a professional? Maybe even earlier than some adults, because they don't have quite the coping mechanisms.
You know what's funny is teenagers will go kicking and screaming, right?
Right.
But once they're there, they love it. because they will tell you things that they will never tell their parents about their lives. And teenagers need guidance, and they know they do. Their friends aren't necessarily the best people to give them advice.
Talk about idiot advice. Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so they love talking to a trusted adult who's going to keep their confidentiality, and no one's going to know what they're saying. So even though it might be hard to get them in, once they're in, they really like it, and they really like that their parents don't know what they're talking about.
We are talking about a real world right now issue in Chicago. We've had, unfortunately, a lot of police officers commit suicide in this past couple of years. A striking number. I don't have them in front of me, but I wouldn't surprise me if in the last 3 or 4 years we've reached double digits, and each time it's a big story. Firefighters the same way. A lot of first responders see a lot of things that we would hope to never see. First responders deal with a lot of people on their worst day, and that comes home with them. But a lot of them also have the qualities. I have come from a family of firefighters. We can take care of this. We're macho guys. We can do that. And maybe some of them can. But that's an answer for our first responders, too, right? I think a lot of people that experience things, just even if they don't even know that they are depressed, maybe just chatting, or maybe we should make the access available to them a little bit better through our fire departments and our police departments.
Yeah.
It's a loaded question, I know. But
well, I think that the culture is one of, you know, we're very strong and stiff upper lip, and we don't need to talk to somebody. But what they're seeing is very upsetting. It's very traumatic, and it does help sometimes to have a place where you can talk about that and release it a little bit and not have to carry it around all by yourself.
Did you mention you do couple therapy as well?
I do.
So I got to ask, because we're in this divided political climate, and I talked to Heidi Stevens, who's a columnist for the Chicago Tribune, about politically divided families. I think a lot of people end up with someone that is politically aligned with them, but have you seen more people coming in that at least politics might be playing some role in some of their issues, or could that just be a surface level thing with other things going on in the background?
I actually do see that.
Really?
I see, because I think more people are really paying attention to politics in a way that they maybe hadn't in the past. And so I think especially with younger couples who are much more engaged in what's going on in the world and what's going on in the country, you know, they have arguments about it. But it's all grist for the mill. It's good for them to learn how to understand that just because you love each other doesn't mean you're the same person, and you can have different ideas and different opinions and understand more about why the person has that opinion, and it doesn't necessarily mean what you think it does.
The book is Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. People pick it up where they buy normal bookstores, and anything else exciting coming up for you?
Just on this book tour.
I was just going to say, yeah, you just wrote this book, and I'm like, what's next for you? No, you're probably like, I just wrote the darn thing. Yeah, so you're on the book tour traveling around, and I imagine the response has been fun.
The response has been great. It's been really gratifying to see how people really connect with the people in the book.
Lori Gottlieb, psychotherapist. Thanks for explaining what that is. An advice columnist, dear therapist at The Atlantic. And maybe you should talk to someone. Thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
More on WGN after this. Hey, John Hanson here for John Williams for another few minutes. And if you're listening on the stream, well, you must be, WGNradio.com or the app. Ro and Anna are coming on after this, after the news, in just a few moments. And then I imagine we'll all merge things together once the Sox game is over, and you'll be able to hear us on WGN on the AM radio. Elif, I found that fascinating. I don't know, and you don't have to reveal on air, I'm not putting you on the spot, about the benefits of therapy and chatting with people. But I think I grew up where I only saw that in the sitcoms, and everyday people didn't do that. But I think nowadays, I don't know if many of your friends, I have a lot of friends that go to therapists that talk openly about it and say it's a wonderful experience.
I may as well just say, yeah, I go to therapy.
You don't have to. I didn't mean.
I do.
That's why I said I didn't put you on the spot. Did you find it to be valuable? Is it a part of your regular week, I should say, or week or 2 weeks or whatever it is?
I go as needed, but I do think that people should go if they have questions about anything in life. They should go, because it's just nice to have somebody who gets paid to listen to you talk.
Right.
Because you know that they're gonna do their best to figure things out with you.
Right. No, I agree. I've not ever actually sat in the on the other side of a therapist chair, but I did mention there was a time when I was out of work. I'd come back home from working one job out in Washington, which will drive anyone into therapy, personally, I got to say. But I worked there for a year, came home, had very little direction in life. I was very morose, and we almost went. I think it would have been a valuable thing. But a lot of my friends go, and they say it's very, very important to them to talk about. wishes.
Yeah.
I mean, like, not even to the point where, like, oh, I had to whisper, I'm going to see a therapist. I'm going to talk to my therapist, or they just mention them by their first name, and we already know them. They're one of the characters in their lives, and help them sort out all their stuff. Before we talk to Anna and find out what's going on in the show, the news click on Friday was about the Cubbies, whether people were worried about them or not, which is not a great question to ask on Friday before a series with Milwaukee. Only about half the folks were worried. Most people said that they thought they'd be okay. I wonder if the answer would have been the same after Sunday. Of course, the Cubs are up 8-0 right now. And LFR, today's news question, I know you don't read it anymore like Siri, but do you want to go ahead and give folks the news click question of the day today?
Sure, in my normal voice.
Yeah, in your normal voice.
I didn't have my Siri SFX ready.
Right, that's fine.
Illinois is the first Midwest state to raise the legal age to purchase tobacco to 21. A, 21 is not high enough. B, 21 is just right. And C, it should stay at 18.
Well, we got the doctor on to talk about the difference those 3 years make in the purchasing of tobacco. I go back and forth. I sometimes feel like we're in a nanny state here in Illinois, or really in the country, and that, you know, adults at the age of 18 should be able to do what they want. But the stats are there that if you raise that age, and especially with e-cigarette usage going up, and that's going to be a way to prevent people, and they're going to thank you later, it might be the best thing to do. Anyways, you can go to WGNradio.com. To answer the news click. Anna DeVantes, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you today? Hey, how can you complain on a day like today? The windows are open. You come up with any excuse you possibly can just
right.
to be outside.
I'm going to go outside, take a quick walk around, and then you just don't show up back to work again.
I'm going to go on my smoking break, but I don't smoke.
I don't smoke,
that doesn't
but
matter.
I'm going to start. I'm going to start smoking today just so I don't have to deal with that, and then just take a look, a walk around. I think the problem is that a lot of businesses aren't ready for it today. We are trying to call every kayaking place around to find out if anyone was open for business, and
it's true. I went out for lunch in the West Loop, and I was like, "You have all these. You have usually they open up the windows,
right? They get the patio out there,
and they get
right?
the whole thing going."
Right.
But
was it ready? Were you trying to get a quick little drink in before the show on the West Loop?
That's only on Fridays.
No, oh, okay, right. Hey, Rose.
What do you mean only on Fridays?
That's all we do. Right?
Are you a member of the cast of this show?
Gotta fall into form.
Right. As long as you're awake, there's a possibility of that.
We
right.
were lucky enough to be at the White Sox home
yeah.
opener on Friday, so
and they had nice
started
weather.
A little early.
Wasn't quite this weather,
no,
but, my
but it
goodness.
Was. It was pretty. I mean, listen, I've been to a lot of opening days
yeah.
in this town.
How about it?
Cubs did very well with their opening day.
Oh.
So, I mean, this is working out.
Well, yeah, I was there last year at the snow out, and I was at a snow out. I ditched school, and it was during the Don Baylor era, and I went, drove all the way down there. Before, you know, I think the Sox did such a good job moving the game the day before, like
yeah.
announcing
yeah.
it ahead
yeah,
of time. Because we went down there, we were all ready to go, and snowed out, of course. But, no, it's gorgeous. It's incredible out
yeah,
there today.
It's very nice. And it reminds me, it's going to be snowing on Wednesday here. So
yes.
No, it really is. I mean, that's the crazy thing.
Really is?
Yes. Tom Skilling will join us to discuss.
Well, he'll explain all that.
I'm
anything
sure
else fun happening? You obviously got the stream for a little bit to start, and then over to the...
Oh, yeah. This is show. Where the swearing starts, right, Kev?
yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to go enjoy the outside.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
This is WGN Radio Everywhere, streaming live from Chicago. And now the news, and it's 3 o'clock. It's Kim Gordon.